So I thought I'd ask, and you can tell me what you want for Christmas. And all of us have things that are our everyday needs that often don't even appear on our wish list, and that totally exceed any kind of Christmas or birthday receipt. But we need them. Vital components like water, air, community. These are the things that we pass on, we re-gift every year, and we need them, and we don't put them on our list. How many of you put oxygen on your list for Christmas this year? But think about it. You need it every moment. How many put love from my family? Oh, I know some of you put that on your Christmas wish list, but love from your family. We pass on these gifts. They're oddly, and they never wear out. We pass them on. This Christmas, I wanted us to think about what we receive at Christmas, what we really want, our hearts need, and what we give to each other, what we re-gift at Christmas time, what we think about that. So I want to consider that. I want to consider that dynamic of the fact of gifts at Christmas. Just 4 weeks' time, you'll be able to have those gifts open that you love, that delight you, that tell you that those that are closest to you love you. It's gift giving. It's one of what Gary Chapman says is the major way to tell people we love them is to buy them a gift. Habits of Christmas. So I thought we would consider today and the next few weeks what the closest people to Jesus would tell us about gifts, about giving and receiving and re-gifting gifts at Christmas time. So today I thought we'd look at one of Jesus' closest friends, John. Imagine John. John grew up about 30 kilometers from Jesus. John is known, of course, his brother James were both fishermen. His father's name was Zebedee. His mother, if you'll recall, was a woman who came to Jesus and said, "Hey, can my two sons be second and third in command in your kingdom?" I think she was competing with Peter and Andrew's mom. You know, can my sons have this position? Tradition names her Salome. And Salome is found amongst the names of women who cared for Jesus, that is, paid for Jesus, looked after Jesus, Salome. Salome is also mentioned as a woman who looked after Jesus so much that she was there during the crucifixion, during the burial, and at resurrection morning. Perhaps John and James' mother, Salome. John and James and Peter were the three that Jesus called out from the 12 and said, "Hey, let's go do this thing together." A number of times, the transfiguration is one of them, in which Jesus had this closed group of his closest friends, and John was one of them. John was the only disciple at the cross. And when he was there at the cross, if you recall, Jesus looked down to him and he said, "Son, look upon your mother. Mother, look upon your son." In fact, he was transferring the responsibility as the oldest child from Jesus to John to look after, and John did. So just think about John. Just imagine John's Christmas traditions. Imagine what John did after Jesus' resurrection. After Jesus was resurrected. Think of John actually spending Jesus' birthday with him and with his mother Mary. If anyone knew about Christmas, it was John. So we're going to take a look at John. And I want to start off with the introduction to John's gospel, because there's some really interesting reflections here in the beginning of John's gospel. There's five gifts that are given to us from God and through Jesus in John's introduction, gifts at Christmas. Excuse me. So if you'll read this along with me, then it helps us to understand and appreciate what John has to say to us. Let's read together. "The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name,
He gave the right to become children of God. Children? But born of God. The Word became flesh, made His dwelling among us. We have seen His glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. John testified concerning Him. He cried out, saying, "This is the one I spoke about when I said, 'He who comes after me has surpassed me, because he was before me.' Out of His fullness we have all received grace, in place of grace already given." The law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Consider that text. The gifts that God is giving through Jesus. These are the sort of gifts that you have, that you need, that you live off of every day, and at least for me, I lose sight of them. What are the gifts that God gives us through Jesus Christ? Well, the first thing is that God gives true light that gives light to everyone. Maybe a little ethereal for us, but here's the true light that gives light to everyone. We see it later on in verse 14, the light that displays the glory of God. Light was given to us. It's C.S. Lewis that said, "It's not the light of God in which I understand God's character. It's that the light of God illuminates everything else." You see, light is in itself an operational dynamic that allows you to see the world, as opposed to the darkness. The brilliance of light that God gave to us. The first thing is that God gave us light at Christmas. The second thing is that this was the one who created everything. We see that Jesus gave us life. Your life. The ebb and flow, however you define it, is actually a gift from God through Jesus. He was the one that made everything. Thank you. So the second thing is your life. He's given you your life. Third thing, we see in this passage that we are given family. And throughout this passage, we are given the right, it says in verse 12, the right to become children of God. Children not born of a human decision, our own choice in the matter, or a husband's will because we were born genetically or physically, but born of God. It's a gift of God that you're given ability to be in the family. In fact, it comes from, as it says in verse 14, the one and only Son. You see, Jesus was given as the Son of God to allow us to become sons and daughters of God. So the third gift is that we were actually given adoption. The choice of God to bring us into His family. We're given family. Fourth one is that the Word became flesh. The Word, knowledge, our ability to have the faith and the hope that comes from fact. We're given knowledge. So we see in verse 12, to those who believed in His name, believed in the Word, who believed in His name, He gave the right to become children of God. There's a dynamic there between believing and being allowed entry into the family of God. The Word became flesh. We see a little later on in verse 17, the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth was given through Jesus Christ. So we have light. We have life, we have family, we have knowledge that came from God. This is what John's claim is. When Jesus came, He came to bring us these four gifts. And there's one more. Through all these things, John brings his presentation to us, the good news of the gospel to us in this section, to a head with the last gift that God gives us. And he says, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Grace and truth. He lands on grace. Grace is one of these words that is overused in our society. There's 9 different definitions of how we use the word grace today. So let me just let's think a little bit on this. What's grace? Well, grace is the short prayer you say at the beginning of a meal, right? Grace is also a smooth way of moving, a charming or attractive trait. A person has grace. Another definition is that it's a title of address or reference. If you're in court sometime and you want to get off, you should use the word grace. Well, Your Grace, I was speeding because I had to get to church. Well, Your Grace, I was parking illegally at the hospital because a person was dying. Your Grace. A sense of propriety or right, another definition of grace. Approval, favor, mercy, pardon, a temporary exemption, a reprieve, is all the words that we've used now for grace. But John doesn't mean any of these. He doesn't mean that Jesus came to bring us a blessing before a meal. But it's a huge concept for John, this grace. What does John mean? Thanks, Alberto. What does John mean when he says grace? Well, the real definition of grace is free, unmerited favor from God, manifested in the salvation of sinners and the giving of blessings. As a Christian, grace pumps through your spiritual veins. You can't live without it. It's free, unmerited favor from God. It's God smiling upon you when you don't deserve it. Grace, free, unmerited favor. And John presents this to us and says, we receive through the Son, this is verse 14, from the Father, full of grace and truth was Jesus Christ. And out of His fullness, verse 16, out of His fullness we've all received grace in place of grace already given. It's the augmentation of grace. It's grace greater that we've received, John says. And then he says, verse 17, the law was given through Moses, the way of connecting with God through sacrifice and through the law was given through Moses. But grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. This is incredibly powerful in our lives. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Grace is yours to receive. It's powerful and it's effective. It's yours to give, to re-gift. It's not foolish, but it has limits in this world. You can come to a limit of God's grace and find out that He doesn't continue to give you favor to do something that's destroying you. He stops you. And that's even more graceful than the grace of freedom that we can do whatever we want. God's grace has limits, at least on this side of heaven. Grace needs and actually has an instruction manual. So it's not just, oh, grace out there, unmerited favor from God. It has an instruction manual, and it's this. This is your instruction manual for grace. You want to know the contours of grace? It's here. You know, want to know the whys of grace, even though that's mind-boggling for me? It's here. This is grace's contour. 365 days a year, grace is given to you by God. And 365 days a year, you have the opportunity to take the grace that's given from God and to enjoy it and to live it out in your own life and then share it with someone else. Love others with it. What does it look like? Grace is one of those words that with 9 definitions, how do we get hold of it? How do we live it out? How does grace change us? Well, let me give you a few definitions. Grace is seen when you acknowledge or validate people who are often forgotten due to economic limitations or physical or emotional or mental marginalization. You see that? You see people walking by someone who's asking for money on the skywalk, and one person stops and says, "Hi." That's grace. It's acknowledging that that person is a human being. Grace is operational when you give a real benefit to someone and don't receive something back in return. Even when you perhaps lose something. Like the friends that are walking along the skyway and one stops to talk to the person that's asking for money and the other three are all embarrassed. What are you doing? Let's keep going. You're losing something. In terms of our personal relationships, grace is seen when you extend a favor to someone else that they don't perhaps deserve. When they are expecting from you anger or rejection or withdrawal, and you can see the surprise in their face because they expect you to react negatively and you're actually giving them grace. You can see the questions in their eyes. Why aren't you doing this? What I just did to you, you shouldn't be doing this back, and yet something's different. That's grace. It doesn't mean there's not more of a discussion to happen, but it's grace. Grace is heard when you authentically say, thank you, please, I forgive you, I'm sorry. Authentically. I thought about it this morning and I realized that I think grace is seen when you see hockey players line up to greet each other at the end of a game, to say good game. And you see the hockey players, I saw this with Andrew and his friend, as they go through the rows, some people are just like slapping hands or gloves, but there's one guy that stops almost at every player and says, hi, how are you doing? Gives him a hug. That's the grace in sports. When you see people respect someone else out of character. All of you have exhibited grace. It embodies the golden rule and the first and second commandments and Jesus' law of love. It looks more like the good Samaritan than the rich young ruler. It's, even though it's not monopolized by Christians, all human beings have the right to extend grace. We do have an inside track into its vast depths and joyous flow. Why? Well, grace is the greatest thing to regift. It's the greatest thing to regift because when you regift grace, you're doing something. You're saying you're willing to give it up and find the source. You see, when you give up something, there's a bit of a faith dynamic going on because you're giving it away. So you, if you need it, which we all do, grace, if you're giving it away, you got to have it replaced somehow. If you give away grace extensively, you're going to have to find a place to have it refilled again. And it may be another person, maybe your church, I hope. But really, the more grace we give away, the closer we are to finding the source of all grace, our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, the Holy Spirit, and God the Father. The more we know God, the less important our lists are, what we want. And the more we know God, the more joy we have regardless of our situation. He fills in the gaps. That's grace. I don't know, when I contemplate grace, when I seek to understand grace, and Janet and I were having a great discussion a few months ago about an event that happened in her workplace. And when it all came down to it, the truth was the problem that was happening was simply because one person didn't have grace. It was there. It was so transparent, it seemed to Janet, that if this person just extended a little grace, it would all be different. All of you have seen it. People that are so belligerent in trying to get their own way, they can't even look someone else in the eye. Because it really is all about them, and the person across the room is just an object to get what they want, and they cannot look that person in the eye and actually allow grace to start to form. You've experienced it. Grace stands in the place of that. Grace stands in the place of a lot of things, even our own intellect. We expect something from someone, but extending grace to them is the greatest opportunity for us to do. I don't understand grace fully, but I know I can't live without it. And I know I am living life much more fully when I'm experiencing grace, when I'm receiving grace from you, than when I'm not, and from my world. So let me just pause for a moment. Our vision, our five vision, is a graceful vision. Why is that? First thing we desire is that you have friends, grace givers in this fellowship. You see, I contend that you can't really have a friend that you call a friend without exchanging grace. Remember that? Your friend in public school or high school that was, after a while, realized it was just about them. They were just using you because it never ended up helping you at all. They weren't graceful. Maybe they didn't realize they weren't doing it. Friends are people who extend grace. We desire to have all of you have friends in fellowship, grace givers, God's grace givers, that in our lives together help us to be buoyant in our faith, alive in our faith, that this place is fun. Grace makes it fun. It does. We desire to have that personal connection with each other. And secondarily, if we have enough grace towards each other and we're loving each other and extending grace to each other, that flows out and extends to others. And people say, that's a graceful place. Walked in the door, a little nervous about being there, and someone welcomed me and asked my name and extended me grace. They didn't say, here's an offering envelope. They didn't say, give us your name so we can respond to you. They said, hi, what's your name? It's good to see you. They were extending grace from the heart. When our grace overflows, others come and join us because it's attractive and they get to know the source of grace. Thirdly, grace is evident in our third desire, and that is that we have enough, a measure of time and talent and treasure so that what we're doing is sustained. That's graceful giving. That's coming from God towards each other, and it's growing in our community. It's a beautiful thing to see. We need more grace here. We do. We need more grace because our world is colder, I think. It's less graceful. I was at Scarborough Town Center yesterday walking through the food court. That was graceless. It's not that the people there weren't nice. It was a beautiful thing to see people out and about enjoying Christmas, but man, it was graceless. And so I decided to do a little test. I thought, well, I'm a grace giver, so why don't I extend some grace? Rather than trying to look around and say, why is no one graceful to me? Why don't I be graceful? So I realized after I got my second cup that that was going to help me be graceful, actually. After I got my second cup, and it was the 10th one, so it was free on my card, so that was even a better thing for me. That was really pumping me up for grace. I then waited patiently in line to receive my coffee. And when I went to look for a place to sit down, which there was no place to sit, except at the bar, at the kind of line of chairs on the wall. And there was a woman kind of spread out with all of her stuff. So I thought, okay, Ken, do I want to extend grace or just belligerence? So I just went up to her and waited for her to catch my eyes, and I said, is that seat available? Can I use it? Sure. Treated her with just a little bit of grace because I didn't demand it. I sat down, and as I sat down, my arm swung around and I hit her. That was not my intention to hit her, but I realized another opportunity for grace. I said, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. She said, oh, that's fine. And she drew in her stuff so I wouldn't hit her again. I sat there for a while and I worked on my message, and she had her coffee, and we just sat, two strangers with a little bit of grace between us. And then she left and she said, have a Merry Christmas. How much grace did that cost me? Maybe she was just full of grace and she was extending it to me, but there was a grace exchange. And as I sat there for a while, two other young people came along, and I had an empty chair on either side, and so they said, do you mind moving over so we could sit together? Sure, no problem. And so when I was about to leave, I looked at them and I said, Merry Christmas. And they responded back the same. A little bit of grace. Cost me nothing. It made my day better. I felt better leaving that crazy mall. With grace. Because God stopped me and said, Ken, you have the opportunity to extend grace here. Are you going to do it or not? I have to tell you that as I reflected on that, I realized, I'll confess to you now. The place where I find the hardest to extend grace is when I'm behind a steering wheel. My grace meter is on extreme low when I'm driving. And God kind of said to me, Ken, you could be a more graceful driver. I said, no, I don't think I can. I guess I can. We need more grace here. We also need more grace at Queen's Park and at City Hall. We need more grace at Scarborough Town Center. We need more grace at Bay Street and Main Street. Every community, every province and territory, every place in this land. We need more grace between First Nations, all the rest of us that have come here since. We need grace between differences of a philosophy in our society. How we differ. We need grace in the cultures and backgrounds that we come from. We need more grace in the Ukraine and Missouri and Gaza and Syria. We need more grace around this world. And we have the inside track because God is the giver of grace through Jesus Christ. It's the greatest gift to re-gift. I want to encourage you to do that, to extend grace to each other in just a few moments when we have our snack prepared, I think, by Lisa and her family. Be graceful to each other. And I pray that God will remind us at times and say, you know what, I've given you so much grace and you've stopped the flow. Let it out. He holds time. He holds resources. He holds love in his hands. He can replace anything that we give away. Without God's grace, we cannot live.